And so we're lining up the calls right now. I think we have one open wild card line if you want to grab it, please. And the international line, too. And international is how Joel Barker is focused, not in an unpatriotic way, but rather thinking of the things that we will be able to develop here, which we will then be able to export around the world. Life-changing, life-saving technologies. And at the same time, expanding our own economy. We can do it. I think you're hearing in here some great investment opportunities for you, too, for the future. Loving that vertical farming thing. Joel's got a few more to get through along with your calls next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. All right, Joel Barker, futurist, author, motivational speaker. You can link up to him through coasttocoastam.com. Let's take a couple of questions, and then we'll get back to the rest of your predictions for 2020. Sound good?
Yep.
Let's get Lady in Alaska, west of the Rockies, on Coast to Coast for Joel Barker.
Well, good morning, Ian.
Morning.
First, I want to thank my lady friend Ruby for her persistence in dialing to get me through to you tonight, and this could be history in the making.
Okay.
And my question to your gentleman, Mr. Baker, is, sir, we've been having a problem with MRSA, and they're saying that the problem comes in through the nostril. And my question to you is, do you see in the future like a little U-shaped thing that's got like two little cones on each side that's got like filters in the nose? Do we just pop it up in there? Because like 90% of the time that you're sitting still, you're breathing through your nose when you acquire diseases, and this way you breathe through your nose and you speak out your mouth.
Some sort of filter like that. Joel?
Like a little nose filter. Yeah. You just like a little U right up there.
Well, first of all, you're raising a really important question, which is the new super bacteria, super viruses that are coming that we don't have anything for. So a preventative like what you're describing is good. I've also heard just last week that they are now swabbing not just the place where they're going to make an incision in surgery now, they're swabbing the noses, the inside of the nostrils of people who are being operated on, and it is cutting down on the disease.
How about that?
So I think the filter idea is a very good one. You should pursue it.
And then Todd, who is in the land of 10,000 rinks on Coast to Coast for Joel Barker. Go ahead, Todd.
Yes, I have a question for Joel, and I also have a couple of predictions.
All right, well, let's do your question. Go ahead.
Okay, my question is, when will they finally release the successful version of the electromagnetic reciprocating engine for cars? This has been worked with a few years back, and I never heard any more on it.
I lost the middle part of
it. Yeah, I did too. The electric what, Todd?
It's an electromagnetic reciprocating engine for use in cars and trucks.
Yeah. There are an amazing number of alternatives. It's really been stimulated lately, and I don't know where some of that stuff is. You know, Popular Science and Popular Mechanics are probably the two best magazines for showing radical engine design and describing it well. If I were you, I'd send that question to them, because if anybody would know it, they would know it. I've not seen, I saw early stuff about an electromagnetic engine reciprocating like 7-8 years ago even, but I've seen nothing recently about it.
And Todd, I thought there was, I mean, there was one of these popular YouTube videos that was going around with a guy demonstrating this, and I read later that was a hoax. So I hope that there are other people that are doing it, but there was one guy that was out there. We talked to him. We tried to get him on the air on Coast to Coast, and an indication to me that it really was a hoax was the guy was never willing to come on, and we couldn't actually find the guy, and it sort of seemed like one of those things that people were kind of messing with others' minds on online. But and then you had why don't we do one of your predictions, Todd? I don't want to get too diverted with that, but let's do one for what you think will be here by the year 2020.
Okay, I'm seeing more of a return to traditional medicines because the current pharmaceuticals are masking more of the problems rather than getting rid of them.
Well, you won't get a lot of argument from me on that.
Get rid of them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of scams out there in the pharmaceutical industry. Joel, where are you with this?
Well, I think that traditional medicine, which was simpler and cleaner and more preventative, is we are going back there because it's part of the cost containment as well.
We were just getting to foam metals.
Yes.
I'm curious about that. What do you mean by that?
Well, foam metals, BMW with another German company has figured out how to take aluminum and blow bubbles in it. Cuts the weight by about 30%. But here's what I really like about it. In an accident, instead of solid metal carrying the shock back into the cabin, the bubbles pop. And so it's also a much safer material in terms of safety. So we're going to now start to manipulate materials like metals to do things with them we didn't do before to gain both. You actually save 30% of the aluminum at the same time because you needed 30% less. But foaming of the metals is going to give us some real advantages in terms of lightweight and structure.
Well, why do we need foaming metals if we have bucky paper?
Well, it's an interesting question because my guess is metals will give you certain characteristics that you can't get from bucky paper, which, if you remember, is pure carbon.
Okay, explain bucky paper and the innovation of carbon fiber nanopaper.
Yeah, I'll do all of these because they're all carbon. Nanopaper is a Swedish invention which they took cellulose that you typically make paper with, ground it down much finer, and when they drew it out and dried it, it was as strong as steel. So number one, a cellulose, which is really carbon in this case, as strong as steel made out of paper, okay? Number two, carbon nanofibers, the reason that's important is because we didn't know how to make it long. You know, this stuff was really short. It was like a butch haircut. Now we can make it almost any length we want, which means we can weave things out of it. We can do great long wrappings of it. So all of this is driving us toward the new carbon economy, and so is bucky paper, because bucky paper is carbon fibers kind of matted together like you would mat paper that gives you just enormous strength. They think maybe 500 times stronger than steel when we get it perfected, and about 10 times lighter. So we are moving into the new carbon economy, which is not about burning hydrocarbons to run your car. It's about making stuff out of this. And there's plenty of carbon available to do this.
Love that. First-time caller line. John is in Denver on Coast to Coast for Joel Barker. John?
Hey, Ian. I got to say, I love you on Saturday nights. Joel mentioned the waterless toilets earlier. And I got to say, I've worked in the building industry, and I like to see changes like that, as well as other things that would make our lives more innovative and efficient. But, you know, I got to say, based on my experience, it's really, really hard to make fundamental changes like that. And you're changing someone's whole lifestyle, and not to mention cost and just, codes being changed and all this stuff. And I was just wondering about the speed of real world change. And I'm thinking that, you know, it's just something about futurists and that futurist tendency. I know there's a positive thing going on there, but just, you know, kind of having a fundamental misunderstanding of that speed of real world change and also the cost of some of these changes.
Joel?
There's some very interesting research that has held true for decades now. It's done by Professor James Bright of Harvard in terms of how long it really takes a new idea to make it into the marketplace. And it's about a decade. So I'm saying it's going to take about 10 years before we see waterless toilets. But we will see them because one of the things that drives innovation, even when you have to change regulation, John, is when, in fact, you're running out of something and it costs you a whole bunch to use it. But if you just switch the system, then the cost goes away. And water is going to become a really expensive commodity quicker than you can think, okay? I mean,
right.
Think L.A., think San Diego, think Tampa, think Miami, think Fort Myers. They're already desalinating, you know, and that costs a whole bunch of money. So once you get to a certain point, the rituals and the behaviors can be changed. And by the way, I think say this on the side. I actually have one patent for a waterless toilet. It's the patent's out now. But when we were going through our studies, people said, oh, it's almost like a standard toilet. Well, there was a reason for that. We designed it so it acted like what you would think a standard toilet was. It can be done, and with good design, you can give people a system where they'll be very happy to use it, and it won't require water. So I just think it's a matter of design and the outside pressure that the cost of water is going to provide to drive this change.
All right. And Judy is in Texas on a wild card line for Joel Barker on Coast to Coast. Judy?
Good evening. Joel, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. I knew somehow, some way you were going to have something about Buckminster Fuller. It just
true.
Had to happen. Now, I'm surprised you didn't go ahead and say about integrating the toilet system into Bucky's one-piece bathroom design.
Absolutely.
And also, my concern is taking the products, what you're saying about the compost, is that the extraction process of taking the contaminants, say drug residues, people on pharmaceuticals, the chemicals from the foods that we eat, now they're radiating the fruits and vegetables for shelf life in the superstores.
Yep.
So, I mean, is that going to be a consideration in taking and recycling that to go ahead and grow more crops? And the other point I have is that I believe that when you were saying about the legislation process, or the gentleman was asking about this change, and it's not a matter of a choice. It's going to be legislated, and that's how it's going to go. And also, I'm going to join your group because I have been studying 15 years. I'm a trend analyst. I've worked for a company which I won't name. I'm past the contractual obligation that I can go ahead with what I've studied and share with you guys.
Cool.
So I really appreciate it, and I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, go ahead then, Joel. Where do you want to jump in there?
First of all, you can see she's a natural because she's thinking systems. And the issue is, I actually did some study on composting with one of the world's experts in composting. And if you do two things, you run it through a composter and then you run worms through it for the final phase, the worms can chemically alter things that would be pathogenic on one side, disappear on the other side. But she's right about the drugs and other things. But right now, we're dumping it into our water. It's going into our waterways. So we have a much better chance of controlling and dealing with it in the compost pile than we do when we spread it out in the water. But she's absolutely right. You have to be aware of that. I think it's doable.
Someday we're going to have worms on Prozac.
Yeah, that's good.
So Brazil, China, and India, we were talking about the way that cities would be changed.
Yeah.
They're on the cutting edge of this already.
Yes.
By necessity.
And here's what I believe. By necessity, you're exactly right. If you've got 100, 1 million plus cities in China, and you want to double that, the cost of materials is just getting exorbitant. If you build our colleges, which are basically 1 mile wide, 1 mile long, and a half a mile tall, you eliminate the need for any vehicular transportation for people inside, because the farthest you have to go is, along the edge, a mile and a mile. But also your materials use are dramatically more efficient, because your floor is my ceiling and your wall is my other wall. And a guy named Paolo Soleri has designed these things, and I think we're going to start seeing serious applications, small scale at the beginning, maybe only 20 stories or 30 stories, but it's the only way we can provide this. We are urbanizing anyway, so we have to urbanize in a way that doesn't eat up trillions of tons of concrete and other kinds of things. So I think we're going to see those three countries be the lead on this for the rest of the world.
Why don't they use Haiti as a lab?
We should. Yeah. And build an earthquake-proof city.
But these micro cities, and allow, if China's on the cutting edge of this anyway, they're already in Haiti. Let's not make the same mistakes, and let's create the space they need to, to sort of rebuild.
Well, Ian, you hit something really important. When you build, and because China is building full, complete cities for 1 million people because they have to,
right?
Just think of how smart they're going to be in terms of city building.
Yeah.
Who else has got the practice?
Right.
So
right,
that
right.
It's literally something I could see them exporting that expertise.
Real quickly, do you want to comment on these hydrogen trains that would connect to these cities?
Yeah. The one thing I found interesting is GE did a study on the best use of hydrogen for a fuel in any vehicle, and it was the trains that came out first because they can carry their own hydrogen, and you don't have to worry about stopping at a station. So hydrogen-powered trains looks like a very logical way to really reduce particulates from trains, give them plenty of energy, and they've got the wheels to carry it, so to speak.
All right.
I think that'll be soon.
Jesse, back in the studio, I'm not seeing who's on the line from Idaho. Who's that on the first wildcard line, Jesse? Chad is in Idaho on Coast to Coast. Go ahead. For Joel Barker.
Yeah, I was just wondering about the stench from the algae and the smell from the methane gas to extract everything to make everything normal. How's that work?
Well, methane, by the way, is odorless generally, right? Methane does not smell like people, like Boy Scouts would refer to methane. It's not really the same. But Joel, you have a thought on that?
I didn't quite get I missed the question. Was it you?
About algae? What about the smell of these things like growing algae and these vertical farms and... Right, Chad, that's what you're talking about?
Correct.
Okay. One of the things that you have in the vertical farm, Chad, is you really have control of the motion of the air through the thing because it's such a compact system. And so it'll just be filtered.
Okay. But filtered meaning that it just goes what? Because, I mean, there are some places, you can go to that have a rendering plant and you can smell it from 100 miles away.
Right, but they don't have filters on their system.
Well, so the algae farms, these vertical algae farms, they're going to be in a tube anyway. It's not like they're growing it out on a field, which is going to be susceptible to wind.
I think you're going to have high control of the air because you're going to want to. In fact, if we go back to Judy's point, when you have a farm that compressed, the last thing you want to do is bring a pathogen in, the air. So you're going to take care of the in and out air real carefully. In fact, who knows how to do that better than Intel? So probably Intel will give us the technology to filter the air so that you don't have the wild particulates causing problems.
The maker of microchips in these perfectly clean factories, right?
Yep.
Scott is in Utah, wildcard line for futurist Joel Barker. Scott?
Hey, Joel. Hey, and I just had a quick question. When do you think humanity, I know they've done some experiments, but when do you think humanity is really going to grasp the concept of controlling weather? Because I know that I've read a lot of different books, and most of them say that that's the mark of an advanced society is when they actually start, manipulating the weather and getting the technology to organize those things.
Well, then if we do that too, Scott, remember, if we're manipulating our weather, by default, we're manipulating everybody else's.
Yeah.
So if everybody else is manipulating their weather, they're manipulating ours too. And so I'm not sure we aren't looking at a future treaty on something like that in order to be able to better understand what our latitude is. I think we got about 10 more predictions that was on Joel Barker's list earlier. 10 more predictions for what we will have in the year 2020. I want to get back to that. If you missed the show earlier, through the invention of Streamlink, you can go back in time and listen to the first couple of hours of the show. Very interesting. Kurt Haskell, too, in the first hour about what happened to him on that Northwest Airlines flight 253 coming from Amsterdam. Or you can go to the blog and you can read Kurt Haskell's words on that and click on to the sheep with the human face and that very funny Girl Scout picture I just put up a few minutes ago. Go take a look online and hook up with Joel Barker at coasttocoastam.com. Last half hour of your calls next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. So heading into our last half hour with Joel Barker, linking up to him through coasttocoastam.com. Next week, another great show. If you didn't catch last Sunday night's show, I want to bring it to your attention. I thought it was really enjoyable, the conversation that we had with Nicholas Meyer, the director of Star Trek The Wrath of Khan, the director of Star Trek VI, the writer of Star Trek IV, the writer of Time After Time, The 7% Solution about Sherlock Holmes and everything else. It's just really enjoyable. I've been having a lively email discussion with him since that show, too. So go back in time and listen to that on Streamlink if you missed it. Tell a Trekkie friend of yours about it. Coming back then with our last couple of calls and our last few predictions with Joel Barker, futurist on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Gene in Wisconsin on a wild card line for futurist Joel Barker on Coast to Coast. Gene?
Yeah, I thanks for taking my call, Ian. And Joel, I got kind of a, it's, well, how do I explain it? It's a question, yes, but it's concerning or how modern medicine and surgeries and that type of information is taking us down the road.
What's the question then for Joel?
That's it. What is modern medicine, the procedures?
Where are we going with it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think two things. We joked about the alimentary canal robot, but I think more and more robotics are going to be part of the surgeries and the exploratories that we're doing. So we're going to get a lot better data about us, a kind of a semi-passive collection. And then I think the other thing is, driven by the costs that are going on, I think we're going to see medicine start to really bear down on the concept of best practices so that we really do figure out this is the best way to do for this category of person. So I think medicine the next 10 years is going to be much more automated, much more internet connected. We talked about that toilet that was going to be ready for 2010, that we're going to have many more sensors that are just going to be ours personally. And the end result is probably two things. You're going to go to the doctor a lot less than you think you are. And number two, things are going to be spotted very early so that they can be taken care of when they cost the least.
We got to have legislation that's ready to protect us on that, or I fear that information will go directly to our insurance company so they can drop us as fast as possible.
And that would be a tragedy.
Yeah, but I really do see that. And I think we don't have the legislation that covers all sorts of things. Like when you have to swipe your, in many states, you have to swipe your driver's license through, even though they look at your card and they see that you are you're a 45-year-old male, they swipe your card through your driver's license when you're purchasing alcohol or cigarettes or something.
Yep.
That's being collected somewhere by somebody.
Absolutely.
All right, but you also think that nerve reconnection will become a standard medical procedure. Yeah. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think with our stem cell research and the other things that we're learning that trigger nerves to regrow, that we will finally be at a point where if somebody has an accident and severs their spinal cord, we will be able to reattach, and they will, in fact, be able to not become paraplegic or quadriplegic. We'll be able to stop that. But then also other nerve damage that we're having to deal with now, really in a primitive way, we'll be much more sophisticated with that.
I think you're right on that. I have high hopes for that one. Charles is in Baltimore on Coast to Coast for Joel Barker. Charles?
Yes, thank you very much. It's nice of you to take my call. Now, here's the thing I like to know. This is about medicine and attitude. You'll see where I'm going to. Okay, if, for example, they try an experiment on a blind person who's never seen before to try to get them back to sight, it didn't work. And, how are they going to, are they ever going to ever overcome that? If they can't, and I suspect they probably can't, here's the bigger problem that we face. We have so many barriers in our way, attitudinal. For example, the two organizations of the blind had to sue Arizona State. He was in the news last week. In Arizona, the university there, because they were, so the blind students could use accessible equipment, because a lot of the equipment they were using, wasn't accessible to us. Okay, another case is...
All right, wait, Charles, that's good. Let's just have Joel respond to that. That's plenty. Go ahead. Yeah, no problem. Thank you. Go ahead, Joel.
You raised one of the most interesting questions about blindness, and that is that those people who have never had sight, we're talking about putting in, you know, a chip in their eye to begin to transmit data to their brain. They don't even know how to arrange it because they've never had the opportunity to do it. So again, one of the things I keep looking at is things are always more complex than we think we are, and my guess is bringing sight to the unsighted is not going to be as easy as it looks. Well, it's never looked easy, but it's going to be a lot more difficult than we think even right now.
But you see a future for retinal scanning devices. What do you mean by that?
That's people with regular eyes scanning what you would read in front of you actually right on your retina, so that you see the words or the pictures on your retina, but there's nothing in front of your eyes doing it. It's just another way of transmitting data.
Like an e-book, but it'd be like an invisible e-book.
Exactly. Very well be the follow-on to the e-book so that you don't even have a physical object in front of you.
John is in Portland, Oregon on Coast to Coast for Joel Barker. John?
Hi, I'm a salesman in Portland, and I've been looking on the internet about new technologies, and I've seen infrared solar panels advertised on the internet, and they have a problem with converting that to a usable energy. I'm just wondering if he foresees that becoming a usable technology in the next few years.
John, the thing that I've been following on solar panels is broader and broader spectrum, and so
right.
Infrared, ultraviolet, and everything in between. And as we increase the range of the spectrum, we increase the number of photons that we can collect and turn it into energy. And so I think they're going both ways, ultraviolet, infrared, and everything in between.
Well, and the main thing I was wondering about is the fact that infrared you can get when it's cloudy or at night and stuff, and I'm just wondering if they've come up with anything to actually make that usable in today's electrical society, or if it's still at the point where they can't convert it to the 50 to 60 hertz that we're used to.
No, I think what I'm following is they are getting chips to see in the infrared. And you're right, during cloudy times, it still can pick up energy. Can at night because there's no big infrared source at night. But that's coming, so I think the technology is evolving that way, the way that you're wondering.
This is good, and this is all important, but again, what would be the market force that would drive that?
Efficiency of the solar panel. So if your solar panel is 6% more efficient because you're also converting infrared, that's a big deal.
Right. That would work. And you think that that North and South America, one of your predictions for 2020, it isn't just a matter of making some North American agreement. We got to think bigger than that if we're going to compete.
Well, I see two, actually. It's North and South America finally form the partnership we always should have. You know, you just think how silly it is that we've left on this hemisphere a major potential set of relationships. We've just been trivializing it all the time. That's where the youth are going to be in this coming century, demographically, for us. In Europe, it's North Africa. And so you're going to see a European-North African partnership as well for the same reasons, for young people to do the jobs, and also especially for North Africa to produce the solar energy to sell to Europe.
All right. And let's get to James in Cleveland on Coast to Coast for Joel Barker, looking ahead to the future. James?
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I have just a question. I was wondering if a truly rotary motion, inertia, rotary inertia, has that ever been converted to a linear motion, linear inertial motion?
You know, I don't know. You're asking a question of physics that's beyond me on that. What we know is a lot of new ideas that have to do with propulsion have certainly been offered this last 10 years because of the energy questions. But you're asking a question too sophisticated for my background.
David is in Eugene, Oregon, and then we'll get in the last couple of predictions for 2020. David, go ahead.
I was wondering if the re-legalization of cannabis hemp, not marijuana, because it's so biodegradable, earth-friendly, it's a renewable resource. You know, it's like there's already close to 80,000 products that can be made with it. It grows
sure.
everywhere.
Well, I think that would fit in with the biochar prediction,
absolutely.
Joel. Talk about that.
It's one of these materials that we should be using. There's all we have has got silly restrictions on a wonderful plant for material, not for medicinals. That's another question. And California and I think Oregon have dealt with it now. But yeah, everything I've read about hemp is that it's a spectacular material. We should be growing it. The world should be growing it. If you're proselytizing on it, keep it up.
Yeah, and I do all the time on this show because I don't have any problem with hemp, especially because you were talking about this new carbon economy.
Yeah.
And the hemp fibers are long, strong fibers naturally, so that would make them perfect for bucky paper or for some of these other uses.
Yeah, it's a wonderful plant.
Yeah. Now, you also have a thought on space travel in the future. And that doesn't seem hard because the idea of space tourism... That's here. I mean, it's very expensive. No one's able to just, you know, like book it like you're going to the Bahamas, but you can do it. But you think space travel is going to change more in the next 10 years?
And we're seeing it start to move on a really accelerated path because of the tourism, because of people willing to spend $200,000 to get into the plane and go up. I think by 2020, we will have a very efficient, compared to today, a very efficient system. And then what I also say is, I think because of the carbon fiber, you know, the nanofiber stuff, we will have the material necessary to seriously consider building a space elevator, and we should probably see the engineering, the beginnings of the construction of the space elevator by 2020.
What will be the purpose of the space elevator? How will that become cost-effective?
Cheapest way to get material into outer space.
And we get it into outer space to do what with it?
Build space stations, build spacecraft to go to other places in the world, build space tugs to bring in the asteroids for the metals and the other materials.
Space tugs.
Yeah.
I dig that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I want to be a space tugboat captain. Let me get to Will in Madison, Wisconsin on Coast to Coast for Joel Barker. Will?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. You and the other hosts on Coast to Coast are really remarkable lot. We learn a lot from the guests you have. My grandparents on both my mom's and dad's side were born, lived in Price County, Wisconsin, and up in northeastern Minnesota by Gilbert and Orr. And the kids that were growing up there, their brains were not brainwashed, let's put it that way, by different religious preachers, priests, whatever. And I am a little bit concerned about a comment that this guest said about United States, for example, joining with the South American countries because the young kids growing up in those countries down there, for example, in Brazil, they live in slums. They don't, their brains, those young brains, don't get a chance to learn things that they learn in Sweden, for example, or in Finland. You know, the Finns have the greatest dental care for young kids of any of the Scandinavian countries. You know, there's something about these smaller countries. England is a great example also, where their young minds get a chance to be great scientists. And I am wondering how religion will be able to free the minds of the young brains in the Philippines, in Brazil, in some of these slums, you know, in Haiti, et cetera.
Right.
How do you answer, young fella?
Let me give you a thought on that. First of all, the countries you named are all countries who are going to be aging very rapidly. They're going to need young people in there, and they're not producing them.
Right.
You look at the population growth, it's almost zero or less than zero. So whether you like it or not, you're going to have to reach into a population that has not been as well prepared. And so here's a hypothesis for you. There's a transitional two-year education academy that all the young people who want to come to the developed countries, they go through that on the way, and you pick them up as early as you can, 12, 13, 14, so that we underwrite that better education for them so that when they come to our country to work in our country and do the things that we are going to need to have done, that we've given them a running start. So I think you've identified a dilemma, and the challenge is to deal with that dilemma rather than just to let it happen.
Well, and I mean, there's a certain amount of prejudice in saying that Brazil is just full of slums.
Of course.
It's not just full of slums. It's just there are slums, but they also have a huge educational system in Brazil. And one of the women I work with here is from Colombia, and although Colombia is best known for drugs, they got a pretty good thing going in Colombia.
Yeah.
So they're not all dopes. They're not all sitting around.
And I agree, they're not all, but in all honesty, when I look at the demographics, we will be pulling kids out of the barrios in those places. So the question is, how can we do that to everybody's advantage?
Right.
Yeah.
Joy is in Santa Cruz on Coast to Coast, wildcard line for Joel Barker. Joy?
Hi there, Joel and Ian. How are you?
Good, Joy.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay, my question is, and it's a huge issue in terms of our biodiversity and in terms of how we eat things. These vertical gardens, which I think are a great idea in terms of cities, how would you handle beef? Because we're not going to stop eating hamburgers.
Yep.
Right.
And we need to have as much grass-fed beef as possible.
Vertical ranches.
Vertical ranches. No, I'll tell you my prejudice on that. I believe animals ought to be in the real world, roaming the real world, eating real things. So my guess is we'll still have ranches for that part of it. But think about growing all the other things close so that the one thing that you're bringing in may be chickens, turkeys, and beef.
Right.
But I think it's much healthier for them to be outside eating and breathing the clean air and walking around.
And this is a man who loves a good hamburger.
Absolutely.
All right. Now, people can get in touch with you. They go to your website. You're a big believer in social networking. Talking about the future of that.
Well, in fact, it's kind of a good way to conclude in that because, in a sense, we've been doing a social network tonight. But the Internet social networking, again, I go back to Andy Hines, my colleague at the Association of Professional Futures. One of the things he gave was that you will be hired as much for your network as you are hired for yourself in the future. That's how important social networking is going to be.
We've already seen that in publishing. Right. I mean, the publisher wants to know how many people you know, how many people are in your Twitter account, how many people are following you on Facebook. I mean, all that stuff, because that's your value to them.
Yeah. Well, think about now the aggregate of that so that they are truly saying, you know, we really love you, Ian. Show us your total social network. And literally, you get hired because of that. I think he's on to something there.
And then to come out of, that's like the ratings for a radio host.
Yeah.
Everybody is going to be in radio. That's my prediction. It is.
No,
you're
really going
to have to prove how many people follow you to get any job.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. I think this is I got to become a futurist and just tell me what my life has been like for the last 10 years and tell everybody what their life is going to be like for their next 10 years.
I think you meet all the qualifications, sir.
Well, you know, it's always a pleasure. Stay warm. I hate you for it. Enjoy your lovely weather. Come see me in the spring when you come back to the snow, okay?
We'll do that. We'll go have a hamburger.
We'll catch a Twins game. Thank you, Joel Barker. God bless you. Have a great night. And everybody else out there, think of the folks in Haiti. Just a little bit makes a big difference. It adds up. These folks they've got nothing. Whatever you can spare. Deus te amat. I do too.